Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. Dr. Adam Crispin, we're actually live here in National Harbor at our FESH conference for the first time. We're having a fantastic, wonderful time. And we want to thank our friends from Royal Canin for sponsoring this wonderful conversation, because we're going to be chatting about pediatrics and nutrition. So it's a very interesting conversation. And joining us is our wonderful colleague, thank you so much for being here, Dr. Manuel Fontaine in the house. Thank you again.
My pleasure to be here, Adam.
Yeah, so nice to see you in person finally, too. I hear so many wonderful things about you. It's finally great to put a name with a face.
I'm a real person, as you can see, with a real French accent.
Right, yes, I love it. Well, I know it sounds like a very simple question about pediatrics, but it's probably a very blanketed term when we're talking about pediatrics and nutrition in puppies and kittens, right?
And you're completely right. I think very often, even in our profession, we use puppyhood, kittenhood, puppy, kitten, you know, as kind of generic terms. While when you think of a puppy or a kitten, there are actually many different life stages within this period, I would say. Because a newborn puppy is completely different from an adolescent puppy at 8 months. So I usually break it down in 4 periods. The neonatal period that goes from birth until 3-4 weeks of age. Then you will move into weaning, when we transition them from milk to solid food. And for me, that's a life stage in itself, because it comes with very specific challenges. After weaning, we'll move into what we call the pediatric phase, from 8 weeks, until they reach their adult size. And even within this pediatric period, you can actually break it down between before spay and neutering and after spaying and neutering. So as you can see, one puppy or kitten might go through 4 different kind of life stages.
And what about the size of the dog too? Does it change in terms of puppyhood with the size of them?
Completely.
Yeah.
I think the main thing we must remember is that canines are an interesting species. It's the species where we see the most variation between individuals. You go from the tiny Chihuahua to the big Great Dane.
Right.
And I always like to remind people that because of this difference in size, they will not reach their full adult size at the same time, obviously. Chihuahuas, we are talking about 8 months. Small breed dogs, 10 months. Medium breed dogs, 12 months. Then large, 15. And the giant dogs, typically around 18 to 24 months.
Oh.
And even in kittens, when you think of it,
awesome.
Most kittens are gonna reach their adult size around a year. But you have those exceptions, like Maine Coons, typically 15 months, so they grow a little bit longer. People always ask me, what about the savannah cats? You know, those cats where basically those animals, they are like, it's a cat, but it's like the size of a small Brittany Spaniel,
right.
Which is crazy when you think of it.
Yes.
On those ones, we don't have the data yet, but I'm sure things keep changing and keep evolving in veterinary medicine, so we might soon have better answers.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay, let's back up a little bit and talk about the pediatric period a little bit. What's the biggest mistake you see during the pediatric period in puppies and kittens?
And that's a very important one in my opinion. When it comes to the pediatric period in veterinary medicine, I think the main mistake we do is that we do not monitor, we do not track those individuals during this period, which is so critical for their health. So when you think of the classic veterinary pediatrics, back in the days, we would do basically 3 assessments during this period. We would see those puppies, kittens, for their first vaccines. Typically, that's around 2 months. Then we will see them again for spaying and neutering, around 6 months of age. And then we will see them again for their booster at a year of age. So that's 3 touch points. And when you think about it, between all of this, there are plenty of gaps. And today, many specialists refer to this as what we call the early life care vacuum. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, with my French accent, sometimes it doesn't come out properly. And I think that's critical, because it means that during this period, anything can happen. And anything that happens during this period can impact those puppies and kittens later in adulthood. But we do not see them. Very often we see them when there's a problem, if they have diarrhea or if they have a joint disorder, but we do not actively try to prevent that. And that is something that, in my opinion, we can completely change. Today, when we do lectures on this topic, very often I will propose a different framework. I tell people we should try to see those puppies and kittens once a month from 2 months until they reach 6 months of age, and then every 3 months at least until they reach their adult size. So you move from 3 pediatric visits to 7 or up to 9, 10, depending on when they reach their adult size, basically. And with more touch points, more assessments, we can actually pick earlier on those tiny things that could derail their health and prevent it better. Speaking about what you just said about those touch points, I wish this was coming from me. It would be fantastic, but it's not.
Yeah.
There's actually a bunch of studies that have been done since 2017 on something we call the pediatric growth charts. And with those studies, they actually propose this framework that I just detailed. And I think it is really game-changing, because if we can integrate that in our practices, then we'll reach excellence when it comes to preventive care during puppyhood and kittenhood.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I'll never forget when I was practicing full-time, in the inside of every cabinet we had, because every pet owner wants to know, how big is my puppy going to get?
Yes.
Right? And so we always had a guesstimate, but now we have these growth charts that we can actually use to really be a little bit more specific on where they're heading and to meet their nutritional needs, right?
Mm-hmm. Completely. And actually, it's a very good thing because we're going to talk more about growth charts, because I can't stop speaking about them. But you see, very often, when we see a puppy or kitten, many things that we're going to do is based on their estimated adult body weight.
Okay.
So in kittens, it's pretty easy. Again, the population is quite uniform. But in dogs, it's a challenge, because I work a lot with shelters, and very often they have those orphan puppies, and they're like, is it too small? Is it too big?
Yeah.
There are different tests we can use, but one I really enjoy are those genetic tests, you know? Those that are basically giving you a breakdown of, oh, this puppy is 20% Chihuahua, 10% Great Dane, that would be fun.
Yes.
But on top of that, those genetic tests are actually evaluating some markers on the genome. And one of the info it gives you is an estimated adult body weight. So basically, you could swap the puppy or kitten and have an estimate of its adult body weight even early in puppyhood or kittenhood, which for us completely changes the game, because suddenly we are more accurate in everything we prescribe and describe and do for those puppies and kittens.
That's incredible. It really is. It changes the trajectory of in which you how you approach conversations in the exam room about nutrition and puppies and kittens, which is great. And speaking of with nutrition, why should nutrition be considered a medical intervention during growth rather than just, you know, that quote feeding?
So I think this is something super important for plenty of different reasons. But let's think about health first. When you think of health during puppyhood and kittenhood, plenty of things can happen. Joint disorders, diarrhea, potentially overweight. We have today data showing us that from beginning of puppyhood, kittenhood until its end, puppies and kittens, up to 30% of puppies and kittens are found overweight when they reach their young adult
age.
30%.
Wow.
30%. But when you look at the beginning of puppyhood and kittenhood, it's only 10%. So that tells you one thing.
Yeah.
It means that during this period, they're gaining weight. And it's kind of interesting. You see, last year, I was giving a presentation in Brazil on this topic. Mm. And people told me, but Doc, we want those puppies and kittens to look a little bit fluffy, you know?
Right, right.
Because they look great on Instagram.
Yeah.
So, might be good for Instagram, but it's not good for the health.
Yeah, no.
I think we can agree on
right.
that. And that is, but by monitoring nutrition during this period, I think it completely changes the game, because it can help us prevent that. And that's one aspect. And we can touch on how we do that later, because that's key in my opinion. But growth monitoring can help for that and help us better determine what kind of nutrition we should be using there. For the gut microbiome, I know this is a very trendy topic in our discipline, but it's interesting to note that during puppyhood and kittenhood, the microbiome is maturing. So of course, there are plenty of different elements that comes into play, the environment, the microbiome of the mother, but nutrition is an important one. We have data today showing that, for instance, if a kitten receives antibiotic during the first year after they're born, they have almost 20 times more risk to develop GI chronic disorders later in their life. If puppies or kittens develop parvo or any GI problem, same thing, more risk to have chronic GI disorders later in their life. That tells us that protecting the microbiome is key in this period when it's maturing, and nutrition can really help that. Microbiome medicine, which is a really growing field of veterinary medicine, is based on use of specific nutrients like prebiotics that are going to stimulate and support the health of those good bacteria. I was telling yesterday in my presentation that there is a study that fascinates me in kittens, where it shows that actually when you feed a dry diet, it activates a certain population of good bacteria. But when you feed those kittens with wet diet, it activates a population of bacteria that are considered good, but it's a different one. So one of the way I see mixed feeding is mixed feeding has lots of benefits, increased water intake, blah, blah, blah. But one of them is also to optimize the microbiome, because you kind of have a holistic activation of all those good bacteria.
All the good ones, yeah.
And again, that will help those kittens later on in their life, because they will have a more diverse flora, and they will be more resistant, so to speak, to any GI disorders they might develop.
Why do you think 30% is a big number that they're getting on the heavy side? Why do you think that is? Is it pet owners that are overfeeding them, or is it something that has to deal with their development? Is it based on certain breeds that are a little bit more predisposed to that number?
I think it's a combination of things. But at first, I think it's what you just said. They might be overfeeding their pets. I keep telling people that when it comes to nutrition, it's really about answering three questions, you know? What do you feed? What kind of diet do you feed? How you feed it? How many meals per day do you give? Do you use feeding enrichment? And how much do you feed? And when you have the answer to those three things, then you can really better tailor the nutritional protocol. But if you take, what do you feed? When I ask this question to many of the clients I talk to, they will tell me, oh yes, I feed this blue bag, or this is the diet I'm using. But very often they omit many, many things they give as treats. So now I change my question to, tell me everything that goes through the mouth of this puppy kitten from morning to night.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's, you will hear, oh, I give them cottage cheese, I give them this, I give them that, and suddenly, because all those treats should not represent more than 10% of their daily nutritional intake, they're receiving much more, and quickly you overfeed them, basically.
Yeah, I can add up. I can definitely see that. And I know we're talking about having the clients come in often, you know, during the puppyhood phase. How can veterinarians communicate the value of multiple pediatric visits to owners who may see them as optional?
I think we need to reframe the conversation. And we should not present those pediatric visits as checkups. We should present them as an investment for the future health of those puppies and kittens. You see, earlier we talked about this new framework that is recommended by the growth chart studies. And I think all those touch points, all those assessments should be seen as a way to pick up early on potential problems like behavioral issues, early growth development problems, nutritional gaps. And if we pick those early, we can correct them. While if we don't, they might lead later on to more health problems during adult life, and especially more costly treatment. So I always tell pet owners that those visits during the pediatric phase, they're kind of an insurance policy for their pet's future. And by doing that, they will optimize and really help improve the health of their future adult dog or adult cat, basically.
Yeah, you want to be more proactive than reactive, right? And that's how you can do that.
I fully agree. And I think, you know, pet owners want what's best for their puppies and kittens. During this period, they're more receptive to everything we want to offer. And we can offer a lot.
Yes.
I remember my presentation yesterday, I was talking about a case I had 15 years ago, and I had this golden retriever in consultation, you know, a puppy, and I was super excited. And there was so much I wanted to share about the health of this puppy, because I thought, oh, those owners, they're new to this. They want to hear about this and that. I had 15 minutes to do my consultation.
Oh.
I couldn't cover anything, and in the end, I had to wrap up the consultation, and they were really upset because I didn't answer what they were coming for. But there, I think communication with pet owners is critical during this period.
Totally.
And it's not just about the message we want to share in veterinary medicine. It's not just about vaccines, deworming, spaying and neutering. There are plenty of other stuff that they want to learn, like emotional well-being of their pets, nutrition, how do we properly feed, which is critical during this period. All of that should be integrated in a really a content calendar that
yes.
we should develop in our clinics to feed them properly those messages. We have this law of marketing that says that for people to remember something, you need to say it 7 times.
Yeah.
And to do that, I think the vet clinic today is a great place because you have the people they see at the front desk, the technicians, then the veterinarians. So you can basically create a communication plan where each actor is going to share those key messages to ensure that they receive, the pet owners receive it in a very digestible way, so then they can take action on what's best for their puppy and kitten.
I love that you said actors and it, you know, and getting the whole team involved in it, because it's great to hear it through different team members. Maybe you and I communicate nutrition a little bit different mm-hmm. than the technician or the CSR, mm-hmm. but it's another touch point, to your point, that they may hear it 3, 4, 5 mm-hmm. times differently, but the same message. Mm-hmm. I love that.
I work a lot on something I call golden sentences, you know, mm-hmm. that we can use in a practice that basically communicate those ideas very simply for pet owners. Like for kittens, after spaying and neutering, I like to tell them that when you spay and neuter a kitten, fun fact, their growth is going to accelerate. While in puppies and kittens, actually, it doesn't accelerate. They will still grow the same way. So it's kind of interesting to know the difference between species. But that basically tells you why when you spay and neuter a kitten, you should switch them to a diet that supports growth, but a diet that is also more adapted to their new physiological status. Because you spay and neuter them, they are going to eat more, plus 20% food intake. They are going to basically need less energy, minus 30% daily energy needs. And some studies show that they are going to see a decrease in activity, like 50% decrease in activity mm-hmm. level. So you want to, basically, I tell those owners, oh, they're kittens, but you want to switch, they still have kitten growth needs, but because of the spaying and neutering status, their nutritional status has changed, which is why you need to introduce these new kind of diets, because that's going to support their health.
Wow. I'm not sure if I'm the only one that, because I feel like after the dogs and cats get spayed and neutered, you almost lose them for a little bit because you really don't see them much unless you recheck an incision. But to your point, I mean, they're puppies and kittens for quite some time, even after that, but they're missed opportunities, I feel like, exactly what you're talking about, where we can be educating and coaching them along with their nutritional health.
And I think this is where pediatric growth charts
yes.
are a game changer. I see them as opportunities, you know, not only opportunities for the business, because they come with this framework of more pediatric visits, but it's also an opportunity for the health of those kittens. Very often we see spaying and neutering as an end. It's not an end, it's the beginning of a new chapter.
Yes.
And by monitoring with those growth charts, it helps you better detect those potential deviations in growth. When I was at the vet school, I was taught that puppies and kittens need to grow harmoniously. Define harmoniously, for you and I, it might be completely different. It was right. a very qualitative approach. Today, with those growth charts, you have a quantitative approach that we can integrate. I'm a big believer that when we have numbers, we are more accurate.
Yeah.
We take better decisions. We can pick earlier on this increase in weight gain. And when we see those deviations, we can take action immediately. And that might involve modifying the nutrition. Because nutrition is basically, when you think of it, very often people just read the feeding guidelines. Sometimes they do not even read them, they just
repeat
them. But the feeding guidelines are the start. The physiology of each individual is different. With those growth charts, you can visualize if you're feeding too much or not enough and adapt. Today, experts recommend to modify the quantities by plus or minus 10%, depending on what you observe. And that's a way to use the feeding guidelines as a start and adapt based on what you see with the growth charts, which changes how we approach veterinary yeah. pediatrics, basically.
Yeah, totally. It changes the whole trajectory of how you educate them for their lifetime, basically, which is great. In your presentation, you talk about each touch point, like we're talking about assessment, is a chance to change a life. And as we're wrapping up here, I know that in your lectures, you mentioned that, quote, each touch point assessment is a chance to change a life. So share what that means to those listening and tuning in.
So I think it comes back to a very, very important sentence that I heard from the World Health Organization. If you change the beginning of the story, you can change the whole story. And this is what they say for human pediatrics. I truly believe the same is true for veterinary pediatrics. And typically in those presentations, when I finish with this sentence, I tell people, this is not just theory, you know? It's a call to action. Because every time we see a puppy and kitten, we can influence their future health when they're adults. We can help those puppies and kittens thrive, reach their full genetic potential. So I tell people, remember this sentence. Write it down, make it your mantra, but try to put it into practice every day when you see a puppy or kitten. And I really believe that just by doing that so, we can change many stories in those puppies and kittens and improve the health of those individuals, and also the health of those animals we'll have in our care for many, many years after that.
You heard it here, everyone. Dr. Emmanuel Fontaine, thank you so much for all the great work that you do for our profession and for nutrition.
Thank you so much for having
me. Fantastic.
It was a pleasure.
Great conversation. And thank you to our friends again at Royal Canin for supporting this wonderful conversation. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.